We just wrapped up episode 27 of Festool Shop Talk with Eric Spensley from Spensley Design Company. And it was really interesting to hear about Eric's journey to how he got started in the woodworking industry in such a small space. So you have to listen to this so you understand how to follow your passion. Check it out.
Welcome to Festool Shop Talk, episode number 27. We're rocking and rolling again. I'm really stoked. Today's guest is Eric Spensley. And I think I asked you, Eric, at WorkbenchCon if you'd want to do this. I think he said yes then.
Yeah, you wouldn't leave me alone at WorkbenchCon.
Hey, want to hear something wicked cool? I go, after we hung up the other day, we were talking, Chris goes, yeah, I spoke with Eric for a huge amount of time.
Yeah,
I went,
yeah.
Cool. Hey, I got a quick question. You had mentioned yesterday you're getting married next April.
Yes, sir.
When?
April 27th.
Oh, too bad. The unit's getting married April 12th.
Ah, that was actually one of the days that was available.
Yeah.
But my fiance was like, I'm going to push it further out so we have more time. But I was like, we already have like over a year to do this. She's like, I just want more time. I want to take it easy.
Yeah. Chris and Emily are going to the having theirs at the Dominican Republic.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why he makes the big bucks.
Hold on. I'll be right back. I'm going to check my mail, see if my invite's in there.
Wicked cool. Hey, everybody. Eric is on Instagram at Spensley Design Co. He has a killer website at SpensleyDesignCo.com. More importantly, he's got an unbelievable amount of really cool, great videos on YouTube. But I think even more important is him and Zach from Zach Builds run Off the Cut podcast. So, Eric, as we always open these, give us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 31. I live in Columbus, Ohio. I've been woodworking for like 3 years. I have no training. Everything I've learned is by messing things up and just kind of learning from YouTube and stuff. So I kind of gotten started with that. And I was like, well, what better way than to just try to give back and share the things I've learned from other people by sharing it with other people. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. And I've only hurt myself once.
Oh, that's not bad.
No.
That's not bad. Yeah, you've been doing it for 3 years. I've been doing woodworking for about four now. And one of these days, I might be able to do this for a living.
Hey, I'm your biggest supporter, Sedge. I mean, you don't need to do any nonsense like running a cabinet shop or anything like that. You know, just step over that part of your life. You don't need to do that.
Oh, I miss it so much. I really do. That was a really, really happy place in my life, owning right. and running that cabinet shop. In fact, this is really weird. Yesterday, my business partner called me.
Really?
My ex-business. Yeah. You know, this is Mikey. He lives out in Denver.
Yeah.
He called me. He goes, hey, how far are you from Chicago, Illinois? And I
like
said, about 2.5 hours.
Okay.
He goes, oh, really? I goes, I've been here for 10 days. I'm leaving tonight.
They would call me earlier.
Come on, Mikey. So
right.
We talk like every other month. He's such a cool dude. Okay. Enough about me. So how did you get started? What was the impetus for you to start woodworking?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a long story, but I mean, we got time, right? And I don't think I've told you this one. I was always a kid who really enjoyed like Legos, building stuff with Legos, or like getting things that we were getting rid of. And I would like take them apart and just kind of see how they would work and stuff. So flash forward to high school. I went to a high school that was filled with, how do I put this politely? A lot of overachievers, I should say. Gotcha. So the majority of people wanted to go to places like Harvard, Yale, MIT, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was never super interested in school. I was good at it. It took very little effort for me, but I hated it. So one of the requirements was that I had to take a foreign language, and I didn't want to do any of that. So they said, you can take woodshop and it counts as a foreign language. And I was like, okay, I'll do woodshop. Fell in love with it instantly. And then it kind of became like senior year and people were like, well, what are you going to do? Everybody was like, well, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to do this. And I was like, I want to say I want to do woodworking, but I know that with all the people around me, all the influence around me, that it's not like an appropriate or acceptable answer when I'm, you know, 16, 17, right? Which is a real bummer. So then I was like, whatever, I'll get into engineering. So I go to college, start doing engineering, meet with my advisor. And she's like, well, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to build and design products and stuff like that. And she looks at me and goes, you're wasting my time. That's not a real thing.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Boy, that's a real good influence right there, huh?
Right. So that pretty much shot down my entire hopes of ever like building or creating anything. So I went through the rest of college for engineering, absolutely hated it, but felt like I just had to do it. Got into my first job, was miserable. I've never been so miserable or depressed in my life. And then my girlfriend was like, hey, we need a dining room table. And I was like, oh, you're the classic. I think I can build this cheaper, right? Which everybody knows you can't. So our friend of one of her friends loans us a miter saw. And I was like out in the parking lot where it's snowing, cutting down 2x4s and put this thing together. And I was like, I have to get back into this. I don't care what people say. I'm getting back into it. And pretty much from the time we made that dining table together, all of this started spinning up and swirling out of control into this crazy mess that it is today.
Yes. That's funny because sometimes life's path takes you on a journey and you're like, okay, I'm existing, but it's not what I like. And then something happens. It's that little impetus. And mine was somebody was charging the restaurants that I owned to sand down a butcher block. And I went, oh, I went to Sears, got a belt sander and did them out back of the restaurant.
Right.
And they go, how much did that cost you? I go, back then it was like $150 belt sander. They go, that guy was going to charge us $1,000. They go, how did you know how to do that? I go, I grew up like that.
Right.
And they go, huh? I go, because I grew up in Maine and everybody knew about, you know, how to do woodworking. And then my wife found out. And the next thing you know, it was over. I was building all the furniture for the house. And I started, you started a parking lot.
Yeah.
I started during the hurricane season on a 2-story screened in porch in our townhome. But that's how I got started back into it.
Right.
And boy, it went from point to point to point. And man, you want to talk about the passion. I just love woodworking.
I'm the same way.
It's the creation, right?
Right. That's my thing. Is my day job. I'm on the computer doing tons of math and everything like that. And like, you know, sometimes you get like a puzzle trying to figure out how to, you know, come up with this equation or whatever. But it's not, I don't get the creative joy that I get out of woodworking, like having this concept in my head and, you know, drawing it out on the computer and then bringing it to real life. Like that's, I get a lot of fulfillment in that. Or around your house, people are like, oh, this is an awesome table, or like media console. Like, where'd you buy this? I'm like, buy it. We made this.
Yeah. And it's that when that happens, it's like, dun, da, da.
Yeah. Get a little taller.
Yeah, man. It's like, it's that pride, I think. Pride in, you know, just even accomplishment. But that pride in craftsmanship. That is so cool.
And okay, you don't need anything crazy. Like, you started on a screened-in porch. I started out in my apartment parking lot where I'd wheel my tools out there, my little table saw. And as soon as I'd get it out, it'd start raining. And I was like, damn, now I got to drag this back inside. And, you know, then once I finally got in this apartment garage, I'm like, this is the greatest thing in the world. I don't have a heat. I don't have air conditioning. I have one outlet, but this is incredible. You know, that's where you got to start, though.
That is the question I had for you.
Yeah.
How do you? I know the answer. You just do. You make things work.
Right.
Because I was in a similar situation. I went from a screened in patio to a storage unit.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. But I went from one outlet, no air conditioning in South Florida, and yeah, I never needed heat. But man, when I'd open that door, people would slow in and go, "What the heck do you have going on in there?"
Right.
You know, so I know the feeling. This, if you can, Eric, tell us about, like, because I had a note here to ask you, and you answered it. You don't have any heat or air conditioning. No. Do you have any now?
No.
Oh, my God. What is the exact size of that shop?
It's a one-car garage, and that's generous. I'd say it's about 9 or 10 feet wide and maybe 15 feet long.
Wow, you need to go outside to change your mind, don't you?
I know.
I went to Elvis Presley's original house down in Tupelo, Mississippi. I think I opened the door and broke the back window. It was so small.
Right, right.
Oh, my God. It was like...
But you really don't need that much space. Like, if you're creative with what you put in there and, like, don't fill it up with a bunch of junk that you don't need, mm-hmm, you're fine.
And you... Are you just, when you're ordering your lumber, you're just ordering it per project?
Yeah. I rarely store anything. I mean, luckily the ceiling goes really, really high. So yeah, it's probably like a 20-foot ceiling. So I can put a lot of stuff up like in the rafters, which helps. Like, that's where my dust collector is, to save a bunch of space. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sitting on like 10 sheets of plywood or like 300 board foot of walnut or anything like that. It's pretty much just when I build something, I go get the lumber for it.
What would you say for machinery is the center of your shop?
Oh, the table saw for sure.
What do you have?
I got the new gold Harvey thing. I'm terrible with model numbers.
Oh, no worries. You got a Harvey, huh?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And oh boy. Do you have more circuits in there now?
No. I don't have access to the breaker panel. So I have one 15 amp circuit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I became friends with the guy who was the maintenance guy at the storage, and he gave me a key to the circuit breaker.
Oh.
I was really lucky. And boy, but I tell you what, correct me if I'm wrong. When you are placed in a situation like that, you just make things work, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it might seem like a huge obstacle to a lot of people, but to me, being in that garage or being in the apartment parking lot, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, sure, I don't have everything that I would want, but you're never going to have everything that you want in your shop. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure.
There's always one more thing you want.
And it makes you understand amperages on the tools and extension cords and everything. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm not going to break a breaker. Oh, I don't want to break a breaker. Huh.
Well, the thing is, if I do, I can't get it. Like, I can use the manual release on the garage, but then I can't lock the garage. So to me, you're laughing. To me, it is terrifying to like think that I might blow the breaker. So what I do is I have those like computer, like surge protector things that have like the built-in breaker. So if I ever pull too much power, it will like trip that. And so I can reset like the computer surge protector thing and not break the main breaker. Now I have blown the main breaker multiple times, and I'm not supposed to be running tools in my garage because it's an apartment. And so what I have to do is I just say, I can't get in my garage for some reason.
They don't know?
No. No.
Sorry.
No. Hard. Yeah. I'm running rogue operation.
I'm going to start calling you the undercover woodworker.
That's what it is, pretty much. And so I've got like 1 year until we move out and get a house. And I'm like, oh my gosh, please, 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 I have to keep this going.
Oh, that is so, so cool, man.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Yeah. And oh boy, look what you accomplished. You have over 120,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah, right around in that ballpark.
Okay, so I know why, but why do you think you're so successful on YouTube in your videos? I know why.
I really think a lot of it is the approachability. Like, I'm not the person that's like, you need to have this massive thing. Like, even like kind of we were talking earlier before we started, like I had a little clip of, you know, I'm going to use the domino. And then I did like the Steve Carell from The Office where he's like, no. Like, I always like make things lighthearted. I'm like, I'm going to use the domino to do this. But then I also will show you how to use a $10 dowling jig. And look, it accomplishes the same thing. It's just speed and accuracy. I try to make things approachable and try to make it funny, bring in, you know, the younger generation into woodworking and show that, you know, the trades are cool to get into. Like, you can make a killing in the trades and you don't have to be a doctor or a lawyer.
I think you nailed it on all fronts because you're relatable. It's your approachability, but you make it fun. You make me laugh. The one on your Instagram feed that's funny is Adam Sandler. I go, I have to watch that one. Is that, I always mix them up. Billy Madison. Is that Billy Madison or Happy Gilmore?
I don't know. Which was the tap it in?
No, it was the one where.
I've done Billy Madison. I've done Happy Gilmore. I have like a whole library of like clips that I've gotten from different movies and stuff. I'd be like, oh, this is a pretty good one to toss in here real quick.
It's also, I really like what you said. It's also, you're trying to make it relatable so you can say, hey, you know, really isn't that hard. You just got to get started. And what you've done in that one car garage in an apartment building is phenomenal.
Right. Thanks.
You know, people get stuck on paralysis from analysis, where if you just, you know, keep going forward, things will happen. Yeah. You got to learn from your mistakes, man. I call it hard knocks. You can go to school, you can go do all this, but the real learning is going through it and, you know, making the mistakes.
Yeah. Failing.
Yeah. Fail forward. That's all you have to do.
Right. Right.
And that's how you become successful. Man, you're killing it, man. It's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, I had no idea where I was going to start with this. I thought I was going to get into building people custom furniture and quickly realize I hate doing that. And I was like, well, what if I make some YouTube videos showing how to do it? And I was like, this is fun. I get paid to make what I want. Yeah. So that's how I got into the YouTube thing.
But do you still have your full-time job right now?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Cool.
So I like to tell people I work two full-time jobs.
Yeah. I don't, you know, Eric, I really don't think people realize how much work it is to host the YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
To do the Instagram and all the social media, TikTok.
Right.
It's a lot of work because you want to make sure that if people have questions, you answer them.
Right.
And you create a community, which you have. And I totally see that. Okay. I saw something that kind of, I went, oh my God, I never thought about this. I saw your post about your, how the heck did your Instagram account get deleted?
That was a whole ordeal. So I guess to briefly go over that, I post videos, you know, usually about one time or so a day on Instagram or whatever. I logged in one day and this thing, I got a message that just popped up on the screen and it said something along the lines of your account has been deactivated due to like violating terms of, you know, whatever the Instagram terms were or, you know, something like that. And I'm like, what the heck? They're like, you have 30 days to appeal it. So obviously I was like, I didn't do anything, right? So, you know, I appealed it and they instantly like replied back with your account has been deleted. So, you know, I had like 110, 115,000 followers on Instagram, you know, making a, you know, reasonable sum of money each month on that. And it just instantly was taken away. So I hunted down all these forms that you're supposed to fill out and try to find all these different people that you can contact. And lo and behold, you can't contact anyone at Meta who owns, you know, the company that owns Instagram, unless you have a direct connection. So I started, you know, hunting people down on LinkedIn and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And nobody would reply. So then I was super frustrated and I wanted to put out a YouTube video just kind of telling people what happened. So if they're like, oh my gosh, where'd you go? Well, this video blew up, got like 200,000 or 300,000 views in like a week.
Wow.
Which is still like, that's great for my channel now, but for any channel, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And one person like basically sent me an email and they're like, hey, I work in IT at Meta. I'm going to help you out. So they, you know, took a long time for him to help me out. And he said, basically what happened is there was just an error in the system that forgot my birthday. So it basically reset my birthday to 0000. And then I was under the age of 13 in their system, which violates their terms of service. So they instantly deleted my account.
Wow.
But he got it back for me.
Oh, thank God. I know I heard about somebody else, but their Instagram account or one of their accounts was snatched away by somebody who hacked it. And he had 135,000 at the time. And I was like, whoa.
Chris Reeves, I think that happened to him as well. Yeah. I mean, it happens to people all the time and there's nothing you can do about it, which is scary that like if you're not diversified, like if your business is in one thing, it can instantly be taken away. You've got to spread out.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just kind of. It got me because I was like, wow, you work really hard on an Instagram account or, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden you can't contact the people that,
Yeah. You're going to get me fired up, Sedge.
I won't. I won't. I was like, okay. Let's get back to the shop.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. This is Festival Shop Talk. I think we've done it for 25 minutes. Let me ask a Festool question.
Okay.
No one's a Festool, huh?
Yes.
What's your favorite Festool?
You know, I think everyone says the track saw.
Yeah.
And I hate to be joining the bandwagon, but I truly think that's my favorite. It's what got me into Festool. And I think it's one of the things I use the most, besides my dust extractor.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll change my opinion. I'm going to say dust extractor.
Really?
Yeah.
So we have a thing here at Festool. When I give a tour of the building or the warehouse, people go, what's your number one tool? I go, hey, look up in the racks. They go, oh, dust extractor. I go, yeah, because it's the heart of the system, right?
Right.
Right. But you're right. Most people say track saw.
I know. I don't want to give the answer everybody else does.
Yeah, but guess what? Everybody says, oh, they asked me that. And I go, yeah, what do you think it is? They go, oh, domino.
And I go,
wrong, it's the track saw.
Right.
Because guess what? That I owned one. My first one was called the ATF-55, and I bought it in 2003, 2004. 2003, I think it was. Oh, my God, I'm an old guy. And you know what? But it saved my, several times. And I had two big cabinet saws. I had a decent-sized shop. But man, that was the trick saw for me. The problem is I was the only one in my cabinet area, and every time I reached for it, it was in somebody else's shop. They had borrowed it.
Right, right.
It's amazing.
It gets you out of so many jams. Like, you know, one of the things I've found, like, sure, you can cut down plywood with it, no problem. But I found, like, if I'm making, you know, table legs or something like that, before I put the aprons on, I put all the legs together. And then just put the track saw across them, zip it across, and it trims all four legs at the same time. And I'm like, now they're all the same length. You can do all kinds of crazy stuff with it.
It's funny. Right before Chris and I jumped on this call, I was just going through what I'm doing for Festool Live this week. And I did TSV 60 last week, doing a plunge cutting part two with it. And I was trying to count earlier. I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think this is my 7th iteration of the track saw. And I still get giddy when I cut with it because I'm going to be going over plunge cutting with it.
Right.
And Chris walked up to it after I did it and he went, yep, that'll do.
Right.
It's an absolutely flawless cut. And the problem sometimes with video, and getting back to what we were talking about, it's tough to get it on video sometimes.
Right.
Especially when we do it live. But it's a lot of fun doing it. And it still to this day jazzes me when I cut that saw, cut with any track saw.
I know.
Yeah.
And especially the new one with that thin curve blade. Like I have the old TS-55. And then when I came over to Indy for the charity build off that we did in the winter, I used the thin curve blade. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need this. It's so fast.
How did you and Zach start Off the Cut? That's your podcast. How did it come about?
Yeah. So Zach from Zach Builds and I think we started following each other on Instagram way, way early on. Like, I don't know, we both had maybe like 1,000 or so followers. And, you know, Instagram is a place you just kind of build a community with people. And so we would chat back and forth. And then one night we were just like, would you ever be interested in like maybe just, you know, whipping around ideas about a podcast? And we're like, sure. So we hopped on a Zoom call and talked for 45 minutes to an hour. And then we're like, why don't we just make this our first podcast episode? It was super natural to be able to just hop on and just talk with him. And the reason that we kind of wanted to do it was because, as you know, you always get these questions. Somebody, you know, sends you a message that says like, how should I start woodworking? Or I'm having this trouble in my business. What should I do? And you look at the question and you're like, I really, really want to answer this, but I can't sufficiently answer this question with any value over text message. Like I basically have to call you or discuss this for 10, 15 minutes. So that was kind of the breakthrough of the podcast, what we wanted to try to achieve and just build more community and just help people really. And to talk about wedge salads, you know.
I love wedge salads.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the one you guys were talking about. What was it? I always mispronounce it. Falafels?
Falafel, yeah.
Falafel, yeah. I was listening to that podcast. I was like, dadgone it, I'm getting hungry.
I know. We do a food of the day to just break the ice for each episode. But we always record every Tuesday night at 7. And most of the time we haven't eaten dinner beforehand. And we're like, oh my gosh, we're so hungry.
Oh my God.
And we have a lot of fun with it. We've got a rival podcast, Green Suitors podcast, available on Apple and Spotify. You don't want to listen to it, though. It's a terrible podcast. But we have a great time bantering back and forth. Got a big rivalry going on, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool. I'll have to give it a listen. Hey, where is Zach? Zach's Canadian, isn't he?
Yeah, he's out of Toronto.
No kidding. That's kind of neat. That's kind of neat. I caught the vibe a couple of times with his accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Podcasts take you away. So when I listen to podcasts and I'm in my shop, I listen to you and Zach sometimes. And I'm like, oh, I got to pay attention to what I'm doing because I'm listening to you guys. It's really, I don't know if people listen to podcasts enough because it's so much fun. And you guys, I'm going to praise you. You guys got a wicked good chemistry.
We just have fun. It's just us hanging out, and we like to every once in a while invite people on. We got to get you on, by the way. We got to get you on soon. If you'd like to grace us with your presence.
That'd be kind of fun. I'd love to do it.
We'll make sure it's a good food of the day.
Oh yeah, for sure. And maybe some wingies, because you know me, I love wingies.
Oh, smoked wingies.
Oh, okay. Who is your biggest influence to get into woodworking?
So when I grabbed that miter saw, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to cut stuff down. So naturally, I went to YouTube. And the first person that came up was Steve Ramsey from Woodworking for Mere Mortals. Yep. And I loved his approach because it was like, you know, he had the cheap tools. He had just a really basic setup, made it kind of fun, not super slow. It wasn't intimidating. It was fast paced, but like very education focused. Yeah. And I instantly latched onto that stuff because it made it super simple and easy to understand and didn't put up this huge barrier of entry, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And boy, I'll tell you what, he has influenced a lot of people to get into woodwork.
And he's the nicest guy in the world. Like, I don't know if you got a chance to talk to him at WorkbenchCon. He's the nicest person ever.
Right?
Right.
Not like Jason Bent.
Oh, I hate that guy. He's the worst.
I know.
You know, he's on a terrible podcast.
You know he's going to listen to this, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay. Nowadays, how are you deciding what to build?
Truthfully, it's whatever excites me or whatever my fiance tells me I need to build.
That's cool.
Cause I mean, like I said, I got out of doing custom commissions. I do them honestly if they pay well and if I'm interested in them. Other than that, I only build what I'm interested in because it's my creative outlet. And if I'm not interested in building that table or that cabinet or whatever, I'm not going to have fun doing it. And I don't necessarily need to be building anything. So like, why would I use the small amount of time that I have available to build stuff doing something I'm not thrilled about? So it's really just what excites me. Like, what I'm doing, working on now, is I had a project about a year and a half ago that was a huge fail. So I had taken glued up a slab, made a coffee table top. It was like 24 by 48. And I got my fiance to like power carve this crazy design in it. And then what I wanted to do is basically do a flood coat of clear epoxy over it. Well, the way that I did it, I tried to like tape it down to a form and then just pour epoxy over it. Long story short, it floated. And then I panicked and tried to put it upside down in the epoxy. Basically, I got tons of dirt and bubbles and stuff all over it. So I want to give it another try, give it a redemption shot and try to like redo that project. So that's what I'm really excited about doing right at this time. And it could change next week. And I just got a 3D printer. So like I've always wanted to get into product design. So I'm working on like just going around the wood shop and like making products that will make my life easier to help out in the wood shop. And it's really just chasing a passion of whatever is exciting to me at the time.
Boy, that 3D printing I haven't gotten into, but Cam Fulton from
Ronnie's kid.
Woodshop. Ronnie's kid. That kid's an ace with 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
He is amazing. He thinks of something and he just goes boom, boom, boom. He goes, here you go, Dad. And Ronnie goes, what? And he goes, yeah, he just made those rail holders for the van for his dad.
Right.
And I thought, boy, everything is so quick these days. And maybe someday I'll get into it. Yeah. I got too much going on. I've been just messing around with a lot of stuff at my shop at home. Hey, how did you first hear about Festool?
So I had seen, I have it's called Woodwork Supply over in Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. I think you've probably been there, or at least your guys have been there a couple of times. A
couple of times. I've done this show a couple of times in there. Oh my God. Wonderful people.
Right. So that's why I'll get a lot of lumber and supplies, but I had gone in there when I first started and I saw this, this Festool truck that they have, this real old, like, I think it's like a Ford or Chevy pickup truck that's like painted Festool blue.
Oh yeah.
And I was just kind of looking around at the tools. I was like, oh, these look cool. Didn't really think anything of it. Then COVID came around, which is pretty much like right when I started woodworking. Mm-hmm. And I was, just on YouTube because I had nothing else to do. And your Festool Live popped up. And I was like, oh, well, this is kind of neat. I've never seen the track saw before, like how it really works. Started watching. I think it was like what, like the fifth or sixth episode or something was track saws.
Yeah, track saw essentials, right, Chris? That was like the fourth, fifth. Yeah.
So it was right around there. And I saw it, and the whole time I was like, I clicked on it. I was like, all right, this is just going to be a sales pitch of like, click in the description, buy this. So you need this, But what was really different is yours was your whole Vestool Live was just, let me show you how the stuff works. Never once have you guys ever said like, oh, go here to buy this or whatever. Like sometimes you make a joke like, oh, you got to have the Vestool screwdriver to be able to do this, right? And it's like, it's funny. People get the humor. But
yeah, actually, but the guy who's watched them.
Yeah. So like, no joke. I watched that track saw one. And then I was like, I'm going to buy this. I was like, I liked the way that Vestool approached teaching people about the tools rather than just hammering it home of you have to buy this.
Thanks.
No, I'm serious. Like you that. I bought it that day.
Yeah. You made my day, Eric. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the highest compliments I could get, because I just love teaching people how to. Somebody said the other day, he goes, I have a track saw, but when I watch your lives on track saws, I learn so much more about them.
I still watch them every Friday.
Yeah. I actually do them every Friday.
I know. You know, I watch them while I eat lunch.
I just love doing them, like setting up today for what I have to do on Friday. And then I have all day tomorrow, Thursday, to really dial it in. And there's so much going on behind the scenes. And because if I get a question or I think, hey, this might work well. And I spend the whole day Thursday setting it up. It's, you know, setting things up for
a video.
It's a ton of work. And then, but the good thing about live, huh, Chris, is not much editing.
Nope. Yeah. And you make mistakes, but you make it funny. You're like, oh, whoops, missed that.
Hashtag whoopsie.
Yeah, right. It's going to happen.
Always. Always. Somebody says you make mistakes on purpose. I go, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. I go, Chris was laughing this morning as I'm setting up the scoring blade for this. And he's going, good thing you're going through that now. I go, yeah, I would have covered myself in the video and the live if I had made that mistake. But
oh, yeah.
But what I'm going to do is, because I made the mistake, I will go through it on the live. I think everybody learns from mistakes. I always used to tell people when they came to class here, hey, make the mistakes in front of me. I'm going to make some mistakes in front of you, but we're all going to share and everybody checks their ego at the door.
Right.
Because one team may not make the mistake, but another one will. And I'll say, hey, I'll stop the class. And I'll go, this is what could happen.
Right.
And everybody over the years has told us that's why we came to those classes. Because sometimes I always think, man, I wish I could still do those classes, but I kind of am, aren't we? In front of everybody on Fridays. So that's fun. Oh boy, I could talk and talk and talk, especially with you. Future, what do you think about your future doing this? Where do you see yourself?
Well,
5 years, 10 years?
Like I said, we're going to be buying our first house in about a year or so. So I've always been super interested in doing home remodeling stuff, you know, building out kitchens, redoing floors, you know, basically renovating an entire home. And my fiance is really interested in that too. So I'm looking to see like how I can kind of blend that sort of content with what I'm already doing. What I'm most excited to build, and it frustrates me right now because I don't have the space to do it, I want to learn how to build kitchen cabinets. You know, I can't do that right now because I can build kitchen cabinets, but where do I put them? And I'm in my apartment. I can't rip out the cabinets.
Yeah. And where do you store them?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. It's all about, so a lot of space in a cabinet shop is taken up by your lead project that the customer says, oh, can you hold for a week or two, and then you have to start your next project. Oh my goodness.
Right. So I want to do a whole kitchen build out with all the cabinets, the drawers, everything. I really want to make a full size like king bed. Don't have room to build that right now. And I really want to build a dresser and bathroom vanities. So as soon as we have a house, it's just going to be this like you know, fire hose of all these things that I'm so passionate and excited to try to build. I'm going to mess them up, but then, you know, start in the guest bathroom, build a guest bathroom vanity, make the mistakes there, then build the master one, and then go back and build the guest one again, right? Like, it's unlimited content once we get a house.
Oh, for sure. I think you're doing it the opposite. You bought the house and then you're going to get married.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh. So they just bought a brand new house and he's borrowed a few tools and going, man, this is a really good tool. I go, you glad you paid attention behind the camera? He goes, yeah.
Right. So
it's cool. It's like he always used to say, hey, I'm just the camera guy. And I look, and then we would be shooting the video here during the week. Yeah. And he says, Sedge, you got to do this. And I went, I pipe up and I go, wait a minute. I'm just the camera guy. You're right. Teaching me stuff.
Or you didn't lock in the depth stop. Yeah, like, thanks, Chris.
He says, I did something today with the CSC. Oh, I didn't turn on the dust extract.
Oh, then sink it or whatever.
Oh, yeah. He goes, hey, Sedge, it works better if you turn it on and then try to sync it. I was like, yeah, Chris. I go, don't tell anybody.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we all make mistakes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Woo, man. All right. I'm looking at my questions I have for you. Boy, we covered some ground here. Boy. Hey, you have any questions for us? Is there a question I should have asked you?
When is the $3 million paycheck coming in the mail for this appearance? That's my finder's fee.
Oh my God.
Have you talked to my agent?
Bent only charges $5.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's because he's a lower class guy.
Oh my God.
By the way, we should cover for everybody listening to the show that we're all good friends and we all give each other a hard time.
Oh yeah. And that's you know what, Eric, I probably would have never met you if Jason hadn't said, hey, Sedge, let's go to Workbench Con, and we drove down there that, you know?
Yeah.
I am really stoked that we have this community going forward because we all share ideas and of course I learned a lot of stuff on YouTube, you know, and I know you contribute and I love it. I love it how people are willing to share. In the old days, people were really tight with info because they thought people were going to chase their jobs. And also I'm just going to say, I'm really, really happy you said, you know what? It was one of those things. I wanted to be in woodworking, but I thought I should go into, right. I should go on to college where I'm going to tell you what, you can make a great living now in the trades. And people don't realize that. And there's a lot of people who went on to go into a profession, but they should have followed their passion. And guess what they're doing? Kind of like us. We found out afterwards.
Right.
That's the journey I should have started earlier. But you know what? There's plenty of time left to enjoy the journey going forward.
Right. And I still have people that don't understand it. Like my parents, they still don't get it. They're like, oh, you're still doing that that woodworking thing? I'm like, yeah, it's going pretty well. And they're like, oh, that's fun. You know, like, how's your job doing? Are you getting promotion at your job? And I'm thinking, I don't care. Like, I'm going after the woodworking thing, but that's okay if people don't understand it, as long as you're enjoying what you're doing.
That's the key right there. When my parents, when they saw the passion erupt about woodworking, my mom was so proud because my grandfather, my mother's father was a master carpenter and her grandfather was a carpenter. And she was so proud that I was starting to pursue this. My dad pulled me aside. He goes, you know what? He goes, there's one day your avocation, which you have now, will become your vocation. He goes,
right.
Enjoy the journey because you don't want to ever lose that enthusiasm. So fast forward, I have a cabinet shop. My parents passed. I have a cabinet shop and I go, man, I wish they could have seen me now.
Right.
And my sister said to me last year, she said, you know what, kid? She goes, mom and dad probably would have moved next to Festool.
Right. Yeah.
Because they would be so proud of you. And I was like, you know what? My parents called it. You know, it's the happiest I've ever been. And Festool has taken care of us so well, me and my family. Okay. I gushed on and I am so sorry. Do you have
a question? I love hearing that stuff.
Do you have a question for us?
I don't think so. I don't think I have any questions for you.
Way cool. Way cool. Oh, I'm going to wrap it up like this, my friend. I want to thank you. Festool wants to thank you for being part of this. We know how valuable time is. And once again, you're the bomb, my friend. So thanks, Eric.
Hey, thank you guys. Thank everybody that invited me on. I really appreciate it. This was a pleasure. Episode 27, though, that took a while to get me on, huh?
It's okay. We're already starting to look at next year. Maybe we start bringing multiple people on. I don't know. So, hey, you're in Columbus. That's about 3.5 hours away.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm thinking about we're going to start doing Between Two Ferns here at Festool, and maybe you can be part of that Festool Shop Talk Between Two Ferns.
Oh, yeah. But as long as Jason Bent or Ronnie Fulton are not there, I'm in. Oh,
no problem.
Okay.
No problem. I can put up the radar for those guys. Cool. All right. That's episode 27, everybody, for Festool Shop Talk. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Sedge.